This podcast was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 31. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Joining us today are Angela and Justin Titcom from Houston, Texas. Angela is an elementary school teacher who has SMA type 2, and she and Justin have been married since June of 2018. Angela, Justin, I want to thank you for both for coming on today.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Absolutely. Well, before we get started, please just listen to a brief word from our sponsors.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploreGeneTherapy.com.
All right. Well, to start off, Angela, I'll start with you. If you could just tell a little bit about your story. So when were you diagnosed with SMA? And just what was it like for you growing up with a disability?
Sure. So I was diagnosed at 16 months old. About a year old, my parents noticed I was not walking. I had met all the other major milestones. I could sit up, pull up on furniture, but once I let go, I couldn't bear weight. And so at 16 months, I was diagnosed. And then I believe around 6, I had an actual muscle biopsy to confirm that I had SMA type 2. Back in the olden days, it was called Wernicke-Hoffmann disease. It's not called that anymore for type 2. But, you know, it was the late 70s, early 80s, and I think life looked a lot different back then. But luckily, I had just a really great blend of parenting. My mom was a Southern lady, and my dad was a hippie from California, and so the combination of the two of them just kind of led to them raising me as a independent, do the best you can kind of person. So I would joke and say that I had, you know, a Sally Sunshine kind of life, but that's pretty much my reality. I don't have any like these horrible moments in my life of oh woe is me. I just you know, always kind of lived very positively with the encouragement of my parents and my peers.
That's great. And could you say the name of that when you were originally diagnosed, what they said it was? Because I don't think I've ever heard that before.
You'll have to research it because it's what they used to tell people. Wernicke-Hoffmann. I think Wernicke is, oh goodness, I don't know. I'll have to look it up. We'll Google while we're chatting.
I'm just fascinated because I've talked to other people with SMA who are also, you know, weren't diagnosed with officially SMA until later, but they usually just said, doctors just told them it was just a form of muscular dystrophy. They never got, to my knowledge, I just don't recall hearing that specific term before.
So yeah, I remember my mom telling me that, and that was the very specific disease that they said, and my uncle and my grandfather went down to like the hospital library and literally opened up a book and read about it. And they came back and I think they were pretty ghostly white and told my mom, you know, surely this can't be it. Cause I think it was rather grim.
That's just fascinating. I mean, the narrative of being delivered false information like that and it being, you know, a very grim diagnosis is common, but that's just interesting hearing a specific diagnosis like that, you know, for someone in your generation. But
absolutely.
I'll definitely look into that more. But, well, thank you. And Justin, could you tell us a little bit just about yourself and your background? And then if you want to talk a little bit about how you and Angela met.
Sure. I was actually born in Ohio, raised in Tennessee, the son of a nurse, and my father was a, or still is, I guess, technically, he was a psychotherapist and a Methodist minister. And now they both are retired. And I've lived in Houston for 5 years, almost to the day. Believe it or not, I moved here at the very end of March 2014. And we met in the very traditional manner of online.
Oh, yeah, no, very common today, so.
Yes, yes. That I'm sure in 10 years that'll be the equivalent of either, I guess it's probably the equivalent now of meeting in a bar, but I guess it's probably the equivalent of somebody just setting you up on a blind date.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really glad to have both of you on today, because I've interviewed people on the podcast before who have SMA and who are either married or in relationships, but this is the first time I've had both parties of an interable couple on the show. And so I'm glad you mentioned that about how you met, because I wanted to ask you both just about the early days of your relationship first. So Justin, and I'll start with you. What were some of the things you learned early on in your relationship about dating someone with a disability?
I think, and I've told this story before, I think on some other panels that we've been a part of and whatever, I think it really hit home, I guess, or really struck me was for a while, we lived about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, depending on traffic, apart. She was up in North Houston and I was here more, in central, close to downtown Houston. And I was driving, we'd been texting kind of all day, and I was going up to see her on a Saturday, Sunday afternoon, I think. And you needed a code to get into her, the gate of her apartment building. Well, we'd only been seeing each other, we'd met each other once or twice at this point. And so I didn't know the code. She'd given it to me the first time I think I came over, and then so, but I didn't commit to memory. And so we'd been kind of texting back and forth. And then suddenly she just went silent. Like the whole drive, I'm driving up there, I'm getting no response from her. And I'm like, huh, this doesn't feel very good. And, got into the apartment complex. I really needed the code. So I called her. Well, no answer. So I'm like, you know, so I finally follow somebody in the gate, illegally, and get in there and, park, and I go to her apartment, and at this point I'm not even sure exactly which apartment was hers, because I only got there once, but I did find it. Knock on the door, and the door opens, and she's sitting there fine and safe and whatever else, and she had just dropped her phone. Well, when I drop my phone 3 times a day at minimum, and I don't think about it, I just reach down and pick it up. She drops her phone, and without having somebody come and physically, obviously, pick it up for her and hand it back to her, she's without communication, short of opening the door to the apartment and just rolling outside and asking somebody or talking to somebody. She's and so I think that's where it really, hit me, kind of the challenges that she's presented with on an hourly basis, if obviously daily, if not hourly basis. So I think that was kind of when I was like, wow, that's, I think things that I don't even think about that I, personally, is very cliche, I take for granted, is a real issue for, it's still obviously an issue for, today. She dropped her phone, last night while I was working out, and, came home, and it's on the floor. And so she had no way to communicate, but, so I think that was kind of early on, my first realization of what to do. And obviously, as things grew, I learned, very quickly the additional challenges. But I think that was the first time I was really awoken to it.
No, that's a great example. It's funny because as soon as you started telling that story, I knew that's where it was going, because that happens to me all the time. And I don't even drop my phone that much, but like, even if it's a few inches out of reach, I can't text a friend, and I have to, and I'm usually very responsive when, my phone's right in front of me. But if it's just a little bit out of reach, yeah, I'm in the same situation.
Yeah.
But that's great. And then Angela, what were some of the other things that you had to work around and communicate to Justin early on?
Well, I think from the very beginning, I was super upfront and honest with my situation. Like even online, I had pictures of me using a wheelchair because I wouldn't want anybody responding to me that wasn't open-minded. And I don't even know that Justin thought knew that he was as open-minded as he was, but, you know, I definitely just wanted to be very forthcoming about that. But yeah, I don't even know. I think just trying to be as real as I could and not faking things. And if I needed something, I wasn't afraid to ask him to help me. You know, I think that being as much of yourself is the answer, so that there's no surprises later.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I know there's, you know, a lot that's been written on this subject, and I would say that's, you know, the number one piece of advice that people who have experience dating with a disability say is, you know, be upfront about it as soon as early on and don't try to hide it, because that only leads to problems. So absolutely.
And I would also say that it wasn't something that I harped on or focused on, or, you know, you just kind of present yourself, this is who I am, but this is also the things that I have to bring to the table of, I'm really fun and we're going to have a great time, and here's some of the advantages of using a chair, and some of the, you know, membership has its privileges moments.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, on that note, I have to ask this one just because I'm sure you both have stories. So, you know, obviously you guys are very communicative with each other, but being an inter-able couple, I'm sure you have to put up with stigmas and stereotypes in our society. So do you have any stories of just like the craziest comments you've received, either from strangers or anything else when you've been out?
You know, we're sitting here just kind of staring at each other. I can't think of any.
We've received, I think if we've encountered any, they've been positive. You know, I don't think we've never really had anything negative, I don't think, said at least out loud that we could hear. You know, I think some people are jealous that I get a ride on the back of a wheelchair through a crowd, and we'd get a lot of comments about that when we're doing that. But other than that, I don't think we've ever really. That I know of.
We probably get stared at, I guess.
I had to get used to that, I think.
Sure.
I think we're a very attractive couple, so maybe.
Well, yeah, I've been getting stared at all my life for one reason or another. I think probably looked at a little bit different. I think now that we're both wearing rings, I think maybe because actually they assumed we were married before.
Yeah, no one. I've never had the brother sister comment.
Okay.
We've always been looked at as a couple.
That's really encouraging to hear. And you know, I only ask because, like, you know, Shane Bracaw's next book is called "Strangers Assume My Girlfriend Is My Nurse," and you know, I know they're not the only couple who deal with that stigma, so. I was just curious if that's something you've ever encountered, but that's really encouraging to hear.
I think, and this may be incredibly stereotypical, but I think if the roles were reversed, I think you'd probably get that a little more. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I think the fact that I'm male, I think that probably people probably don't think that I'm the nurse or the caregiver for that matter.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's fascinating to think about, but you know, that's really encouraging to hear. And then the other thing I wanted to hit on while we're on this subject is, so the Dr. Phil thing, just because that's kind of a hot topic right now in many disability communities. And for our listeners out there who don't know about this, you can listen to the last podcast. My coworker and I talked about it, and I just had a column come out about it. But, during an episode of Dr. Phil, titled, "I Swiped Right on My Quadriplegic Boyfriend," he told the girlfriend of a quadriplegic man that she could not continue to be his caregiver if they both wanted the relationship to survive. And he stated that 100 out of 100 times, inter-able couples who do this fail. And I know, you know, there's a lot of controversy, obviously, that stemmed from this and a lot to unpack here. But I just wanted to ask you both about this subject, if you had any perspective to share. So, if you had any thoughts here.
Yeah, I made a post about it because I wanted to join in on the conversation. I think one of the things that I said is that, you know, Justin is not my primary caregiver. You know, we have a group of 6 to 7 people of women that come in and help me with my daily needs. But I made the point that to say he's not my caregiver is completely untrue. I mean, he literally does so much for me on a, you know, minute by minute basis. I drop things. He cooks for us. I need to be turned over every night. I mean, the list would go on and on. But as far as, you know, that blanketed statement of 100 out of 100, I think that's horrible. I know many, many couples who they are in a relationship in which one of them is a primary caregiver, and that works for them. For us and for me, I am particular that I want Justin as much as he possibly can to feel like my husband. I literally would go to the ends of the earth to find someone to come and work a shift, you know, either put me in bed or get me up or help me go to the restroom during the day. I'll call whoever I need to, and would only resort to using him if I absolutely 100% needed him. For instance, when we were in the middle of Hurricane Harvey and had to be evacuated, he had to be my sole caregiver for 2 days. But the fact of the matter is that I know he would, and he would do it lovingly and not in a way of you know, behaving out of frustration or things like that. He knows that I don't want to have to rely on him, but there are going to be times when I do. So yeah, I think that was so hurtful, and I think of young people with disabilities thinking to themselves, who's going to love me if they're not willing to take care of me and help me? It was just so harsh, and it is something that I think we need to continue to talk about and see examples, not just you know, these little posts here and there. I think people need to show their relationships and show that love works no matter the circumstances. I don't know if you have anything.
Well, yeah, I agree with everything and that you said, and I think, you know, to what's been said to date in other posts and whatever else. And, you know, I have some, you know, friends and stuff that you know, after they kind of learned, you know, about our relationship and whatever, and, you know, just kind of inquired, like, you know, do you have to take care, you know, or whatever else. And so, you know, I know how to do everything. She's taught me, you know, essentially how to be a caregiver, but I don't, you know. And they say, you know, they kind of say, how does that work? How do you feel about it? And I kind of remind them that, you know, it's unfortunate to think about, but everybody's one car accident or freak fall away from being in the, you know, a part of the disabled community. You know, and as I look at them and say, you know, you've been married for, you know, so-and-so, you've been married for 8-9 years now. You know, if your wife was in a car accident tomorrow and was, you know, had to live in a wheelchair, you know, you would gladly do all this stuff that I'm talking about. You know, you wouldn't think twice about it. So why would I, you know, think twice about it as part of as entering a relationship, to it. But I agree. She goes to great lengths to make sure that I am not her sole caregiver, and I think that does work, and it makes
that works for us.
It works for us. Yes, it works for us, and it makes our roles more traditionally husband and wife, and prior to that, boyfriend girlfriend.
Absolutely, and no, I think that's a great perspective. Thank you for sharing there, Shifting gears a little bit, you know, again, thank you for sharing about everything you do as a couple, and also feel free at any point if you want to come back to this, feel free to let me know. But shifting gears a little, Angela, I did want to ask you as well about Spinraza. So I know you've been on the treatment for a while. Can you talk about your experiences there and if you've seen any improvements, what that process has been like for you?
Yeah, so I you know, 2018, I didn't think could be any greater because I got married and just am so tremendously blessed. And then I started taking Spinraza, and oh my gosh, my life has just changed so much. I from an energy standpoint, I am a different person when I'm on the medicine. As a teacher, I'm sure, you know, everyone who's listening knows what a third grade teacher goes through during the day. I'm so tired every night. And when I took the medication, or when I'm on the medication, especially really close to the dose, my energy level is just exponentially greater. I'm not as cold as I used to be. What else, babe?
Your breathing is
not as labored, I guess. Yes, yes. I'd read a book at the end of the day to my students, and I was only getting through, you know, one or two sentences. And now I just, I can just read and read, and it's just amazing, like, the difference that I feel. It was a challenge in that the first, so I'm about to take dose five. So I've done my four loading doses.
Okay.
And the first one went beautifully, and they found the microscopic hole in my spine, and we were able to do a lumbar puncture, and it went great. And my parent, Justin, actually was out of town on business, and my parents went with me, and it was like, I can just get emotional thinking about it right now. It was the most special moment of mine and my parents' life in regards to all things disability, because, you know, they rolled me out, and I said it worked. And my dad, who's just this rock of a guy, he just got really emotional, and we just kind of cried together. It was so special. And then the second one, 2 weeks later, Justin was in town, and they tried for 2.5 hours, and they couldn't get it in.
Ugh.
And I thanked God that Justin was the one with me, because I just lost it. And honestly, had I never had the first injection, and that would have been my first experience, I don't know that I would have done it again, because it was so disheartening, and it was so uncomfortable, and it was just a lot to go through, and I you know, I wouldn't have known. But because I had this amazing experience the first time, and I felt the benefits of that drug, and I know how good I feel on it, I am willing to do whatever I need to do. And the doctors have told me the other three injections that were successful, the next three times, it's basically a crapshoot, is what the doctor says. But, you know, again, I am such a proponent of Spinraza, and I'm so happy to be on it, that I just want to just continue and do whatever it is that I have to do. If we have to find an alternative route eventually, or whatever, I love it. Like, I would wear a t-shirt every day that says I'm on Spinraza.
Ask me about my Spinraza.
Yes. We have a lot of Spinraza jokes. Like, it's just great. I think you'd agree.
Oh, yeah, no, I make a ton of jokes with it, too, because I get mine through the cervical injection, so, like, a shot in my neck, and so, yeah, I mean, whenever I go in, I'm like, oh, it's time for a shot in the neck, Dick, you know, like, and...
Yes,
you know, and it's, oh, yeah, it's tons of fun, but... Well, and it's interesting you said that the second injection is where you had troubles, because, like, I've heard that as well from other people, too, where getting the lumbar puncture or the spinal tap injection, it's like a... Usually the first one goes really well. Sometimes with the second one, it really depends for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, I'll do whatever I have to do.
Right.
And I think with my, just given my career, I may notice the energy level more than other people do.
Yeah.
Because I'm required to just do so much throughout the day that when I got this boost, I was just, it was just amazing. Like, right now I'm looking at a pile of papers that I have to grade. Like, my job doesn't stop when I leave the school. It goes well into the night. So.
Right. No, that's great. And actually that's, thank you for saying that, 'cause that brings to a nice transition here. 'Cause, for the last part, I kind of just want to ask both of you about your daily lives, you know, with work and you've been married almost a year now, or getting close to it. What is kind of a typical day of the week like for each of you?
Yeah, so we joke, you know, we both got married in our 40s. And so, you know, we have our We're into routine. We're definitely routine, and we are also big planners. So we like have our grocery list of what we're going to buy, and we schedule out what we're going to have every night. Justin is an amazing chef, and so we eat well, and we're very social, and so we just have this great schedule. But yeah, so he wakes up without an alarm clock, naturally. What time, babe? Like,
I typically, and this is one thing that is unique to at least our relationship. I don't know if every interability relationship is like this, but you know, one thing that I try to get across to friends or you know, people that ask about, you know, I can never essentially go to bed before her or get up after her, because a caregiver comes in and puts her to bed and gets her up. So I mean, I guess I could, but it'd be a little odd to be laying in bed while they're putting her in bed.
Especially because my morning caregiver is our 14-year-old neighbor.
Yeah, that would be
okay. Yeah,
that would be both inappropriate and illegal. And so I, I get up about 5:42 every morning, and stumble out of the room, and then the caregiver shows up at 5:45, almost exactly. She only lives two houses down, so she just walks down and comes in the house, and I take the dog for a walk and come back, and she's just about, by the time I feed the dog, feed the cats, all that stuff, she's almost magically put together and sitting and rolling out to the kitchen table to wolf down a small breakfast and get ready to head outside or head to the driveway to get in the van.
Yeah, so I'll head to work at 6:30 and teach.
Well, I've been blessed that one of her teachers from her school actually lives about five houses down, so she has somebody to drive her to and from school every day, which is incredibly nice.
And we don't live near my school; like, we're a good 20 minutes in the morning. So, Justin actually works at a building. If there weren't a huge skyscraper in between my school and his building, then we could literally see each other. We're that close. But yeah, so we both go to work and do what we need to do and come home. And Justin is very faithful about going and working out every night, and I'll work on grading papers or tutoring a student after school, whatever it is that we've got going on. And then he comes home and makes an awesome meal and sometimes lets me chop something. I think it makes him nervous.
Yeah, she always has to help. And when we first started dating, I said, all right, well, so I bought her this cutting board that I measured her wheelchair and kind of your mobility of your arms and whatever else. And I bought a cutting board that would work for her, that's got a rubber base and stuff, so it doesn't move around.
Literally on our first date.
Yeah, I brought a cutting board. The heck with roses. I brought a cutting board. So I'm gonna, you know, if we're gonna do this, I'm gonna put you to work. So
that's love right there. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we went through a myriad of knives until we found one that actually worked for you very well.
The perfect knife.
Yeah, so we let her chop some things if I'm doing something that requires a lot of preparation from a vegetable standpoint or something like that. So
jambalaya is my favorite. It needs a lot of prep.
There's a lot of cutting, a lot of easy of celery and onions and stuff, or celery and green onions, which are really good at cutting.
Spinraza has made it even easier.
That's right. But to watch her do it would make anyone nervous. I'm afraid that at some point she's going to chop off a finger.
Which he jokes that I don't even use that much, so it's not.
But what if it's the one that you drive your wheelchair with? It's going to be incredibly tragic. She does help. Even if she's not helping, she at least asks if she can help, which is there's something to be said for that, because you know, I've had my dog for 7 years. He's never asked.
Yeah, so we cook, and then we watch TV, and 90% of the time I will fall asleep in the middle of whatever we're binging on Netflix, and then the caregiver will come over and take a shower and put me in bed, and Justin will flip me over about halfway through the night because I need to be turned, except for...
No Turn Tuesday.
Greatest day of the week for him.
That's right.
And it's the night that I will just lay on my side and know that he is getting as much of a full night's sleep as he can, because every other night I ask him to help me. So
that's funny. I don't know if I've ever heard of like a system like that where you have a specific night to not turn. So I don't know if I want to do that myself. I do need to turn every night, but.
I've tried to institute no turn Monday through Friday on several occasions, but it's never bared any fruit.
Yeah, we're going to call that bed sore weekend. Yeah. So.
And our weekends are, normally we've got something Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday. We're fairly active by choice.
Yes.
And some of it's very, very little obligation necessarily. There's a few things we have to do, kind of, but we stay fairly active and always planning ahead and making sure we have something to do for the weekend.
The last night of our vacations, we always plan what our next vacation is.
My mom's a big planner too, so that sounds exactly like her, you know. Well, since you brought up the knife thing, I know that's a weird transition, but I did want to ask, since you're a teacher, do you have any assistive technology you use while you're at school, either like to use a computer or something like that to help you out?
Yeah, I use a document camera, and I have probably since my third year of teaching, like before document cameras were in everybody's classroom, so that replaced the old transparency overhead projector machine. So basically the camera can show whatever's like right in my lap. So I can use that. And, my school graciously hired an aide for me for half the day. And so I have an aide. I have an able-bodied person who's able to do the physical tasks of the job that I can't, even to the point of it was chilly outside and she was able to take the kids out for recess on days when it's just too cold for me. I was really worried. I worked at a school district for 16 years. And when Justin and I moved in together, I had to change districts, and the district that I was in was where I grew up and they knew me, and, they paid for an aide and there were no questions asked because they knew, that I brought a lot to the table as an educator, and I was terrified when I moved districts and I could not possibly have moved to a better school with a principal that has believed in me from day one. Obviously there are physical things that I'm not able to do, but as far as me being a teacher and the children learning not only the curriculum, but to become better people. I think that he celebrates that and therefore makes that part of our budget. And that means the world to me.
That's really cool. It's funny because I was just reading an article early today in the MDA Quest magazine about workplace accommodations. And there are companies like that who do that, that they'll be able to work with a healthcare agency to hire someone, and it's really cool to see that, and I wish more companies would do that. So
I do too.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, before we close, and again, I want to thank both of you for coming on today. This has been great. Do you guys have any advice for either other people with SMA or other interabled couples about out there, just about, you know, based on your experiences and your life experiences?
I would just say, especially women, I know there's so much pressure to find your partner, whoever they may be. But I think it's definitely worth the wait to wait for the person who is your match. Justin and I get along like peas and carrots. I mean, we have the best time together and we're very much alike. And I cannot say enough about how much I love him and I can't wait to be home and be with him. And I hope that, you know, whether you're in an interabled couple, if you both have a disability, if you happen to not be disabled, like whoever your partner is, I think that they'll be your match because they're the person that you want to spend your time with, whatever their circumstances are. So that's my advice.
Yeah, I think I would echo those, that advice, those sentiments, as well. And I think, you know, I think if we've learned anything, I've learned, you know, as cliche as it sounds, you know, don't pass up any opportunities and by the same time, don't waste your time with, you know, with someone that you don't want to be with. And so, I think, I've seen it all from top to bottom. So I think, you know, it could have been easy for me to see a picture of, a chick in a chair and, you know, already just assume, well, you know, there's no way that relationship would work or there's no way we could have fun together or whatever else. And, you know, I guess I took a chance, but I mean, that,
you did.
Know, I mean, and you know, here we are almost five years later. It's the greatest decision obviously I've ever made in my life. And I wouldn't change anything.
That's great. And
for the record, I took a chance too. One of his pictures online was of him and his dog dressed up together. So
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it was. In fact, that may be more of a stretch than I was thinking at that point.
Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with the dog lover. That's good.
Yeah. I love that dog. I love that man.
That's really cool. Well, Angela, Justin, I want to thank you both again for coming on today. This has been a great conversation, so thanks for sharing your stories.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories like this by subscribing to this podcast. All episodes are available on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, and right here on our main website. You can also find all of our written and video content there and connect with us directly on our forums page. I'm Kevin Schaefer, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.